we've talked about from the very beginning of the book of Joshua that, go back. There we go. Joshua 21, 43 through 45. So the Lord gave Israel all the land He had sworn to their forefathers, and they took possession of it and settled there. Not one of all the Lord's good promises to the house of Israel failed. Every one was fulfilled. And now this begins today for us studying about it. This begins in Joshua chapter 6 when they go in and they take over and defeat Jericho. So the beginning of the promises here, when we get to this stage, this is summation of the promises, but this is where we're going to start today, that now all of a sudden the promise is going to start to come true when they actually begin taking over the land. And so what we've talked about before, up to this point, we have talked about crossing the Jordan. We talked about the 12 stones memorial. We talked, Perry talked last week about the circumcision of Gilgal and the celebration of the Passover. And all of these were just preliminary events to getting the Israelites ready to go into the land, ready to start taking possession of it. And all of these were very significant events. But, you know, there's a time when you prepare and you get ready, right? But there's a time you actually got to start. Preparation is great. Getting ready is great. But there's actually a time when you got to roll up your sleeves and you got to get to work. And so you know as I do that any type of job, any type of situation, when it actually comes time to go to work, that can be kind of scary, can't it? You know, you start a new job and you go to onboarding. You go to your onboarding class and they tell you about all the great things going on in the company, all the benefits. And then you go to a training class and you get your laptop maybe and you get your health benefits book and you get all that stuff. And it's just all great. And they show you all these great videos and, you know, it's like, oh, wow, this is going to be awesome. And then Monday morning you got to go to work and you go, well, what did I get into? Yeah. You know, you take that deep breath because it's showtime now. Yeah. Okay, so now it is showtime for them. And that's what we're going to start talking about today. And we'll start with, in the words of the old spiritual, Joshua fit the battle around Jericho. Everybody know that spiritual? Yeah, okay. Four of us. You haven't heard? Joshua fit the battle around Jericho, Jericho, Jericho. Joshua fit the battle around Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. Sweet. Thank you. Thank you for the backup. Yeah. So we're going to talk about that. This is a terrible picture now that I have it out in the light. This is all awful. But this is the best one I could find. Most of them were cartoon pictures. But here we have, we can't do the lights or anything. Can you kind of see the walls right here? Kind of there. There's some priests here. And here you have the priests, the seven priests who are in front of the ark. Here you have the ark, the priests behind them. Then you have these soldiers back here on the back. This was the best one I could find. I did have one up here in front of it, but it was a cartoon and had a bunch of little dogs running in front, which I don't think there were a bunch of little dogs running in front of it. But so this is the best we had. So let's start in Joshua chapter 6, and we're going to go back and start in verse 1. Now Jericho was tightly shut up because of the Israelites. No one went out, no one came in. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have delivered Jericho into your hands, along with its king and its fighting men, before a single step was taken. I have delivered them into your hands." Would that be a confidence builder? "March around the city once with all the armed men." Now let's kind of stop there and make a clarification. We always have pictures and images of we always think of the children of Israel marching around the city. It wasn't the children of Israel. It was only the armed men and the priests who'd been designated that actually marched around the city. Now that ended up being about, I think it was about, oh, how many men was that? Maybe was it 500,000 or 600,000 or something like that? When you do the compilation of all the armed men that are mentioned over in the book of Numbers. So it was quite a few men, but it wasn't the women and the children and all that, and even some of the men. It was just the fighting men. March around the city once with all the armed men. Do this for 6 days. Have 7 priests carry trumpets of ram's horns in front of the ark. On the 7th day, march around the city 7 times with the priests blowing the trumpets. When you hear them, sound a long blast on the trumpets. Then the wall of the city will collapse and the people will go up, every man straight in. So Joshua, son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, take up the ark of the covenant of the Lord and have 7 priests carry trumpets in front of it. And he ordered the people, the armed men, advance, march around the city with the armed guard going ahead of the ark of the Lord. So here's what we have, key elements to the battle. We're going to talk about this element by element, and then we're going to break it down a little bit. So here are key elements. First of all, in verses 6 through 10, we have our battle orders given. Verses 6 through 10, our battle orders are given. Verses 11 through 9, the battle march. Verses 20 and 21 and 24, the battle in Jericho. And there's something very significant about this that we'll talk about later. Verses 22 through 23 and verse 25, saving Rahab and her family from the battle, or the events of the battle, I might say. And then verses 26 and 27, the conclusion of the battle. So we'll leave this up here just for a second so you can copy that down if you want to. So first of all, let's talk about the battle orders given. Verses 6 through 10. We've already read verses 6 and 7. Let's read verse 8. When Joshua had spoken to the people, the 7 priests carrying the 7 trumpets before the Lord went forward, blowing their trumpets, and the ark of the Lord's covenant followed them. The armed guard marched ahead of the priests who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard followed the ark. All this time the trumpets were sounding. So they're doing this as they're walking around the whole thing. But Joshua had commanded the people, do not give a war cry. Do not raise your voices. Do not say a word until the day I tell you to shout. Then shout. So here are the instructions, and they're very simple. To the priest, he simply says, take up the ark. And then he says, priest, walk in front of the ark. Okay, blowing the trumpets. And then priest, walk behind the ark. So that was pretty easy, right? Anybody can figure out those instructions. The instructions to the people were basic as well. To the armed guard, rather. He says, march around Jericho. Do not make a sound. Shout when I tell you. Now you can imagine, you're about to fulfill a promise that was made to Abraham 400 or 500 years before. The moment finally is at hand. Some of you had been there when you had the problems in the wilderness and your parents and your grandparents were told, well, they can't go in. And so you're younger than 20 years old. And so now you're striking up about 60 now. And the time is at hand, and you're waiting for these great battle instructions, and here they are. You go, I'm sorry, excuse me, what did you say? You know, it's like, this can't be. This is it? You know, the priests are thinking, well, we got something to do. Everybody else is thinking, I'm just supposed to walk around the city and not talk until I'm told to talk? So, Joshua is basically setting them up to let them know that this is a work of who? It's the work of God. It's not the work of man. It's not a man's plan. It's not a man's vision. It's not a man's wisdom that's going to break down the walls of Jericho. It is God. Now, I don't have to say anything more about that for your life, do I? Think about that. So many times, and I am the same way, this is me. I have all these great plans. I have all these great schemes. I have all these wonderful things I'm going to do. And I plan them out. And, you know, I'm a nerd for making plans sometimes. I mean, it's just amazing. And then it doesn't work. And then God wants me to do something with no plan, and it works. You know. I'm not a smart man, but I should be able to figure that one out. So, remember, the plans don't have to be great. It's good to have a plan, because they kind of had a plan. But the plan is not the thing that makes it happen. It's God who makes your plan succeed. The battle march. And this is really, really interesting. You're thinking, what's so interesting about this? Let's kind of look at this. Let's look at verses 11 through 19. So he had the ark of the Lord carried around the city, circling it once. Then the people returned to the camp and spent the night there. That is day one. So day one, let's go walk around the city one time. Guys are blowing the trumpets. Everybody's walking around. Nobody says a word. That's day one. Day two, Joshua got up early the next morning and the priests took up the ark of the Lord. The seven priests carrying the seven trumpets went forward, marching before the ark of the Lord and blowing the trumpets. The armed men went ahead of them, and the rear guard followed the ark of the Lord while the trumpets kept sounding. So on the second day, they marched around the city once and returned to the camp. They did this for 6 days. That's days 2 through 6. Day 1 is verses 8 through 11. You can write this down if you want to. Day 2 is through 6 is verses 12 through 14. And then day 7 is verses 15 through 19. On the seventh day, they got up at daybreak, which they'd been doing every day. Just kind of a little side note there. If you're going to fight a big battle for God, get started early in the morning. That's for free, by the way. Yeah, just get started early in the morning. So let's talk about a couple things about some elements of this. One thing is the priest. It says the priest, they started marching before the Ark of the Covenant in the presence of the Lord. Or some versions put, they passed on before the Lord. The NIV says they walked before the Lord. So they were, to them, this was a spiritual event. It is a spiritual event. It wasn't a battle, but they were doing this in the presence of the Lord. The armed men, if you'll go back to Numbers chapter 10, I want you to look back there just for a second. And this is just FYI. It's just, you know, a little biblical information. Go back to Numbers chapter 10 to kind of give you a little bit of a flavor of what this looked like. Starting in verse 14, whenever the Israelites marched out or moved from camp to camp, this is pretty much the way they did it. And so what we're assuming is this is probably the way they marched around the city. Starting in verse 14, it says, the divisions of the camp of Judah went first under their standard. And then it says, let's just read all this. Nashon, the son of Amminadab, was in command. Nethanel, son of Zohar, was over the division of the tribe of Issachar. And Eliab, the son of Heden, was over the division of the tribe of Zebulun. Then the tabernacle was taken down, and the Geshonites and the Maronites who carried it set out. And so this is kind of the way they always went out. They went out Judah. Issachar followed them. Zebulun followed them. Reuben followed them. Simeon followed them. Gad followed them. Skipping on down, Manasseh followed them, Benjamin followed them, and then it says the rear guard for all the units, the division of the camp, set out under their standard, Dan, and then we go on down, and then the tribe of Asher, and then probably at the very end was the tribe of Naphtali. So that is pretty much the way they did things. So we start with Judah, and we finish up with the tribe of Naphtali. And this is probably, going back, this is probably how they actually marched around the city, was in that order. There is some, I know we don't care, but there's been scholars. Have you been around people who are scholarly? You should say, yes, Gary, we've been around you. No, we haven't. There's a big discussion about who actually led the fight. And this is a big talk. Well, it was the Transjordan tribes. And then, you know, these scholars have written all these things about this sort of thing. And so the truth is, guess what? We do not know. And for most of us, we do not care. Thank you, Ron. Yeah. We neither know nor care. But just to give you an idea, that's kind of what was going on in all probability. The tribe of Judah was leading the whole thing, and the tribe of Naphtali was at the very end of the thing in terms of their marching order. So let's look at the march. We've kind of looked at that already. We talked about day one. Let's see, we've already talked about day two. Let's skip on down. Let's get down to the seventh day, because the seventh day is kind of a really unique strategy that I know we're familiar with, but let's pretend like we've never heard it before. On the seventh day, they got up at daybreak, marched around the city seven times in the same manner, except that on that day, they circled the city seven times. Now, if you're sitting up there, you're a guard up on the walls of Jericho, you're looking out, and you know what's been going on every day, and then on the seventh day, they go around one time, and you expect them to go back to camp, and all of a sudden, they just stay out there and keep going around a second time. What are you thinking? Something's up. That's all you're thinking. You're thinking, oh, wait a minute, what's up with this? Because pretty much, we've been up here making fun of them, right, for about 6 days now, and now all of a sudden, these guys are marching on the seventh day. What is going on now? They circled the city seven times. The seventh time around, when the priests sounded the trumpet blast, remember Joshua told them they were going to do that. So they've been kind of, I don't know what little tune they've been blowing up until that point. Now all of a sudden they stop and they blast with their trumpets. Joshua commanded the people, shout, for the Lord is giving you the city. The city and all that is in it are to be devoted to the Lord. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall be spared because she hid the spies we sent. But keep away from the devoted things, so that you will not bring about your own destruction by taking any of them. Otherwise, you will make the camp of Israel liable to destruction and bring trouble on it. That is, if the soldiers do anything, they said you'll make the whole camp liable to destruction. All the silver and gold and the articles of bronze and iron are sacred to the Lord and must go into his treasury. So we have a couple things here. First of all, we have shout, and basically that means they had a battle cry. So they shout out this battle cry. That's basically what that word means. And he says everything in Jericho except for Rahab and her family are to be what? They're to be destroyed. Now this is big, because this is the first time we're going to see this thing about women and children and men and sheep and donkeys, young and old, are to be destroyed. Now, we're going to spend some time later on talking about the extermination of the people of Canaan, which is very hard to get our hands around. You know, I think it's probably one of the absolute hardest things in all of the Bible to understand about why God approved of a complete extermination of a people. But this is the first time it happens. And so we need to understand that this is what happens. We're not going to sugarcoat it. We're going to talk about why. We're going to try and understand it. But we need to realize this really did happen. Exterminate doesn't mean anything other than exterminate. So don't fall away or leave church. Let's before you have a chance to talk about it, let's get back and talk about it. But just realize that this is a reality. So something is said here in verse 18 I want us to kind of hone in on this morning a little bit. He says, but keep away from the devoted things, so that you will not bring about your own destruction by taking any of them. Otherwise, you will make the camp of Israel liable to destruction and bring destruction or bring trouble on it. And there's a phrase that is used in the book of Joshua quite a bit, and the phrase is Kareem, Kareem. Now, that's not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. All the men are going, yeah, I've heard of that, yeah. Did he play basketball for the Lakers in the Bucks? Okay, C-H-E-R-E-M, C-H-E-R-E-M. And that's the way the concept is used. Now, this is used throughout the book of Joshua, so we'll come back and we'll talk about this over and over again, about the concept of Kareem, Kareem. And what it means is, it is a doomed object which becomes something that is dedicated to God and is not to be touched by man. So, the things inside of the city that God wanted to spare, they were doomed along with everything else in Jericho. The silver and the gold and the bronze that they brought out and put into the Lord's treasure. He said, those are doomed along with the city. But what I'm going to do, God says, I'm going to take things that are doomed along with the rest of the city, and I want you to take those, I want you to dedicate those to me, and those are not to be touched by man. That is, they are not for men's possession, they're for my possession. Now, next week, Bill's going to talk about AI and the results of when this was not obeyed. And so make sure you pray for Bill Francis next week as he discusses that with us. But he's going to, this topic, the whole concept of Kareem is really discussed in chapter 7. But the wording is used here in verse 18 more than any other place. And it's used four times in verse 18. We only read it three times if you got an NIV or NLT. It only is used three times. The word of doomed is used, or destroyed. But the King James Version adds it in another word there. They saw it. I said Joshua chapter 7, verse 1, which the Bible wants to talk about. So let's talk about, let's go to Numbers chapter 21. Go back to Numbers 21. And let's discuss this idea just for a quick moment. Because this is a concept throughout the book of Joshua that meant more than just gold and silver and bronze possessions. It was a description, in fact, of not only Jericho, but it's a description of the Israelites. Because they were referred to as Kareem also. They have been doomed. And then God, through Abraham, brought up a nation for his own and dedicated them to him. There are different people in the Bible who referred to the concept of Kareem is used to them. People who were doomed. And then God brought them up and dedicated them to him. So guess what we are? We're Kareem. We were doomed to destruction. And God reached down and grabbed us and made us dedicated to him. And we're not to be touched by man. And I think that is a very important concept for all of us to get hold of from the book of Joshua, because we all need to realize our place in God's mission, God's plan, and how valuable you are. You're not here because someone invited you to be here. You realize that? You're here because God moved somebody's heart. And if that person had not invited you, somebody else would. Because God wanted you. And he moved things to get you to the right spot at the right time. Acts chapter 17. Is that right? Verse 26. That's why you're here today. And you're dedicated to God. And you are not to be touched by man. The truth is, the Bible says a lot about the fact that nobody can break your relationship with God. What can mortal man do to me? You know, I'm afraid of what people can do to me. We all are. Someone says, I'm not afraid of what people can do to me. You're not being realistic, because you should be afraid of what people can do to you. Okay? But you don't have to be controlled by that fear. Because God will protect you. And no matter what's taken away, what's destroyed, what happens, no matter how many barriers people try and put themselves between you and God, they can't take you away from God, because you're Kareem. So I would really hold on to that. And we'll talk about that a lot in the book of Joshua. We're going to introduce it today. But this is very important, because as the children of Israel move through taking over the promised land, guess what happens? They forget it. They don't believe it anymore. And it ends up just causing a whole host of problems for generations after that. But Numbers chapter 21, this is very interesting. It's one of those little FYI things. It says, when the Canaanite king of Arad, who lived in the Negev, heard that Israel was camping along the road to Atharim, this is when the children of Israel were kind of roaming around in the desert, he attacked the Israelites and captured some of them. Then Israel made this vow to the Lord, if you will deliver these people into our hands, we will totally destroy their cities. The Lord listened to Israel's plea and gave the Canaanites over to them. They completely destroyed them and their towns, so the place was called Hormah. And Hormah is from a Hebrew word, which is Kormah, C-H-O-R-M-A-H. And Kormah is from the word, ta-da, Kareem Kareem. So they named this area Kareem Kareem, a doomed object dedicated to the Lord and could not be touched by man. So that's pretty cool, I think. I like that. You may not like it, but I like it. I like it a lot. So let's go back. Jericho. So first of all, we have the destruction of Jericho. And he says all the silver and gold are to be sacred to the Lord, must go into his treasury. So let's go to verse 20. When the trumpet sounded, the people shouted. And at the sound of the trumpet, when the people gave a shout, the wall collapsed. It wasn't an earthquake. It wasn't a tornado. There was no natural explanation for it. I've seen even very conservative religious writers talk about the natural explanation for the walls of Jericho. It fell down because the people shouted and God made it fall down. That's the total explanation. So every man charged straight in, and they took the city. They Kareem the city to the Lord and destroyed with the sword every living thing in it, men and women, young and old, cattle, sheep, and donkeys. Now, what's very interesting about this is that the description of what happened in the city, if we were writing a description of what happened in Jericho, in all probability, would we not have a lot much more detail? You think about it. We would talk about, oh, how this army came in from this way. Have you ever read a recording of battle plans? Anybody ever done that before? It's really interesting. Historians write about these battle plans and particularly about the Civil War, they'll say, well, so-and-so marched up from here, so-and-so marched up from here, and then they encamped around them, and then they did this. It's very detailed. The details here aren't much, are they? Because walls collapsed, went in, killed everybody, thing was over with. And that's because this was God doing it. We don't need to know the details. It's what God did. It's what he's trying to point across here, I think. Joshua said to the two men who'd spied out the land, go into the prostitute's house and bring her out and all who belong to her in accordance with your oath to her. So the young men who had done the spying went in and brought out Rahab, her father and mother and brothers, and all who belonged to her. They brought out her entire family and put them in a place outside the camp of Israel. So, a couple things are said here. It's really kind of cool. First of all, Joshua tells the guys in verse 22, he says, go into the prostitute's house and bring her out, and all who belong to her in accordance with your oath to her. Oath is a great word in Hebrew, and it basically means seven. It's a Hebrew word that can also mean seven. And when people would take an oath, Jews would take an oath, they would take it seven times seven. Everybody know what that meant? Basically meant that they were committed to it. That they were devoted to it. That seven is a perfect number among the Jews. And also, when we get over to the New Testament, we see the word seven used a lot. The number seven used to be. And what means? It means perfection. And that's why Peter says, how often am I supposed to forgive my brothers? Seven times? Perfectly? And Jesus says, Let's go for 70 times 7. How about that, Peter? You know, and that means forever. And so when Joshua told these guys, he said, you had an oath, and basically he says literally, seven yourself. Seven yourself. Go fulfill that oath to her. You said you'd do it, now go take care of it. And they says they are all spared. So everybody who was in the house, father, mother, she had said her sisters, although her sisters are not mentioned here, uncles, aunts, any family member, anybody they'd get in that household, I imagine it was packed out, in all probability, they were spared. And it says they brought her entire family and put them in a place outside the camp. Everybody know where they did that? Yeah, you couldn't have, they couldn't have any non-Jews living inside the camp at that point. Now that would later change because they'd become proselytes, but at this point, nobody could stay inside the camp. If you skip on down, it says, verse 25, but Joshua spared Rahab the prostitute with her family and all belonged to her because she hid the men. Joshua sent his spies to Jericho. Remember that? She had her part of the bargain. She fulfilled that. Now they're fulfilling their part of the bargain. And it says she lives among the Israelites to this day. And again, this is where that phrase "to this day" plays a part in terms of who the author is. Because that is kind of that's another one of those real-time things. Throughout the book of Joshua. It says again and again, to this day, to this day, to this day. And so that's why they say that. And gives kind of a real-time concept here. All right, we're almost done. So hold on just a little bit more. I almost forgot to say this. This is pretty cool. Go to Genesis chapter 9. I saw this in a commentary I was reading, I think. And I thought, wow, what a great lesson. Genesis chapter 19. Genesis chapter 19. And I want you to think about the story of Rahab, and when she found out her city was what to be destroyed, she looked for a way to be saved, didn't she? Got all her family there, did the scarlet cord in the window, made the oath with the spies, with those two middle school boys, as we say, you know, the whole deal. Compare this with Lot and his family. The two angels said to Lot, do you have anyone else here, son-in-laws, sons or daughters, anyone else in the city belongs to you? Get them out of here because we're going to destroy this place. The outcry to the Lord against his people is so great that he has sent to destroy it. So Lot went out and he spoke to his sons-in-law who were pledged to marry his daughters. He said, hurry and get out of this place because the Lord is about to destroy the city. But his sons-in-law thought he was joking. What a startling contrast to Rahab. And I think here's a great lesson, and we won't, just to bring it up here, that when you're in spiritual danger, what do you do? Do we take it seriously? Or do we just blow it off? And there are tons of lessons in the Bible about when we're spiritually endangered, what we should do with that. And I thought, I read that, when I was reading that, someone mentioned another commentary, I thought, that's exactly right, I never thought about that before. But the two stories are so parallel in nature. One family's saved, one family's lost, simply because of the way they valued what was being said to them. So, which is a great lesson for us. All right, so let's wrap it up. Verses 26 and 27. At that time, Joshua pronounced his solemn oath. Cursed before the Lord is a man who undertakes to rebuild the city Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn son will he lay its foundations. At the cost of his youngest will he set up its gates. So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame spread throughout the land. So Joshua pronounces a curse on Jericho. The curse is not that it can't be inhabited. Because, just write these verses down, If you go to Judges chapter 3 and verse 13, Judges 3 and verse 13, if you go to 2 Samuel 10 and verse 5, Judges 3:13, 2 Samuel chapter 10 and verse 5, you'll see that the city is still inhabited. People are living there, but the walls are down. And the city is basically demolished, but people still live, obviously, inside the city or in its environs around the city. What Joshua was cursing or saying was, it's not to be rebuilt. Basically, the walls and the gates are not to be rebuilt. Because if you do it, you're going to be cursed. And so if you go to 1 Kings chapter 16, 1 Kings chapter 16, Joshua said, if you rebuild it, the walls and the gates, basically, it's going to be at the cost of your firstborn. So in 1 Kings chapter 16 and verse 34, it says that in Ahab's time, Hiel of Bethel rebuilt Jericho. He laid its foundations at the cost of his firstborn son Abiram. And he set up the gates at the cost of his youngest son, Segub, in accordance with the word of the Lord spoken by Joshua, the son of Nun. And this was about, I think this is about maybe 500 years later. So all that time, Jericho lay desolate. Guy tries to do it again. And it's the cost of his sons, just as Joshua prophesied 500 years before. So we don't have to say that when God says something, don't do it, right? We figure that piece of the puzzle out. Okay, thank you guys for being here in accordance with our... Everybody ready for this one?
Yes.
Here we go. Oh. All right, go get them.